professional.
It's the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in technology. The show with more adverts than a London phone box. According to one email this week. We've lost a listener because apparently they think we have too many adverts now. There's two people who don't actually pay us anything. They just support us, but, you know, and the community section. So, awfully sorry, Mark, but f*** off, will you? I don't give a shit. I'm here to discuss the week in technology with an amazing panel. I mean, when I say amazing, I mean purely average. Top left, it's the Streak. How you doing, mate?
Hello, I am quite well, all things considered.
Back again. Have you recovered from being on Batwench's moist list?
I'm still in recovery mode about that one, yeah.
Mate, that is, I don't know if that's kudos or not, I have to say. How did your wife feel about that? That's it. Sweden's floated off into the universe. There we go. Next to him, from Scotland, with an equally dodgy connection, it's Paul Wheatley. How you doing, bud?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
A week to go!
I can't believe it's a week on Monday, and
I know.
I went and got my dollars today. I meant to do it yesterday, and I did it today. It was exciting times. I'm actually holding the currency.
At a vastly overinflated rate or decent?
It wasn't too bad. I got bored. There was like four shops when I went out for lunch and I wandered around all four of them and I got to the last one and I thought, right, I'm going to work out which one's got the best rate. And I decided on the fourth one I couldn't really be bothered to go back to the one that had the cheapest rates I just bought in the fourth one.
That's the thing. You see, you sit there and you look at the rates and stuff and you realise you saved 20 quid on $1,000 or something like that. So you think, I'd have actually paid someone 20 quid to go and get the frigging currency for me.
Well, the thing was, I was only buying 100 quid in cash because I'm just taking it out of a card. So I was only really saving myself like a couple of quid.
That's like $5,000 at the moment.
Such a man.
I know. But I got to the last shop and thought, oh, screw this, I can't be bothered to go back. Because the cheapest one was the first one I visited way back in the beginning.
Did you get bent over for the last one?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I think I got about, it was $160 for £100 or something like that.
Oh, man, they saw you coming.
It's not awful.
It is. That's like $300. Well, maybe.
No.
Ish.
Because you're getting about 1.6, which actually that is 1.6.
Beneath.
Wowzers.
Damn, 100 times 1.6, no clue. Beneath Ball, our soon to be professional referee and rivaling Nigel Owens, Gazmaz.
Good evening.
How's it going, bud?
Hey, it's going good, thank you. It's going really good. Looking forward to this weekend. Got a cup final. Yeah. Two ARs. We'll be wired up. Yeah, should be good. Last weekend was good. Yeah. Oh, life is good. I'm on the big show. It's good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Did you really mean to say that you're going to have your ass wired up there?
Mate,
I thought you'd get that at the weekend thing, you know?
Yeah, just take the E out and you're right.
Okay. I'm moving on. Last but by no means least, Righty Boy has been drinking at lunchtime. This could mean editing.
Yes, maybe.
Are you all right, boy?
I'm all right, but I'm bloody.
Is there something wrong with my internet or something?
Eh? I'm bloody marvellous. I had a crappy few weeks being ill, but I feel on top of the world this week.
What's caused that then, mate? What's caused that?
Not being ill for one. Having great fun today, trying to set up a Skype conference in Libya. That was great. That was a great laugh. Got some bloke to drive out to the desert to get a satellite connection. All good fun. But yeah, no.
Is that like the TV aerial thing? No, move over there.
No, it literally was. It was like, he was like, I'm on WiMAX. I was like, have you got direct connection to your server? He's like, no. Can you drive a bit further? Is that any better? No, drive a bit further. And then he's got to do an exam tomorrow from his car. Bless him. But yeah, we're on for tomorrow morning. So it was a trial of errors, but we're all on. So I'm feeling really good about myself.
I don't know about anyone else on the panel, but that is the most bizarre conversation I've had in about 20 years. That's up with Bomber McAllister sitting on the A69 or whatever it was, diving into the show.
No, I will be contacting Libya tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning.
How many hours ahead are they?
It's all ready to go.
How many hours ahead are they?
I think at the point we were doing at 9:30 this morning, it was about around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. There,
so you can't really call him right now then, get him on the show, because that would be technology at its best.
Yeah, no, he's over in Tripoli, so it was great fun kind of conversing with him today. Going, any better? No, it's not any good. Drive a bit further. And then we got to a point about 3 o'clock this afternoon where he was pin sharp.
In
so
Albania.
I'm going to say, someone on the show from post-Gaddafi Libya is on my bucket list. It is.
There you go.
The week in technology. Well, the World Wide Web was 25. And ITV ran a story on it and got the difference between the internet and the web right.
I am impressed.
TV shows, and not to mention working class, awful TV shows with zero IQ, got it right. Well done.
Nicely done.
Absolutely love it. Well done. And my wife watches the news and the weather and stuff, so. That's how come I know. I watched it. Innocent. I'm impressed. I'm really impressed. Because normally the stuff that's on here is shite. Utter bollocks. But there we go. We got it correct. I'll give it like as a complaint, but who cares? The week in tech, what have we got then? Start us off, someone.
Go on then. I'll give you a go.
Who's picked the World Wide Web as their story?
We all have.
All four of you. You bastards.
No. All right, which let me jump in because I've got no idea what this story is all about, really. I'm going to post a link into...
You've picked a story you don't understand.
No, yeah, but it's cracking.
Well, why am I complaining? That's what we do every week.
I think this is a cracking story because I think it could mean something really, you know, dodgy in the future. Basically, this story is about motors, but it's about small motors.
I saw this too.
Yeah, and we're now talking about, you know, nanomotors that are now being able to be run. The problem is that it looks like the components that actually are needed to run the damn thing are about three times the size of the motor itself. But we're talking, you know, really tiny motors which can control.
Hang on, Gaz. I mean, I've had a couple of gin tonics on the train on the way home, but the components are bigger than the motors. Sounds like bollocks.
No,
to me.
It's like, you know, where they've soldered the silicon chip to control the motor. It's like a great big. If you can bring up the link that I've sent in the chat room, there is a picture down there, and you'll see what I mean. But basically, the silicon chip which the motor sits on is enormous, but the motor itself is getting smaller and smaller. And the reason I kind of raise this is this is going to start to get scary, I think. If they can obviously get motors that tiny, you're going to have little tiny robots scurrying around all over the place. It's the NSA. They are going to be chuckling in their boots if they can get this sort of technology up and running for them to do all, you know, forget all of the stuff that we've had recently with the bugging phones and picking up all of your calls and your emails. They're basically going to have cameras and little beasties running around following you everywhere. So it just seemed like a relevant story for the time at the moment because we've got the internet, which is now 25 years old, and we've got products which are just getting smaller and smaller, be inserted in your brain, and you'll be able to interact with the web. The web will be able to tell you where to go, what to do. It'll tell you your earwax to move out on its own. It's all that sort of stuff.
I saw a thing the other day about a pill that you can take. I got an email about it, actually. It was interesting. Anyway, no, a different email. It's a pill that you can take that can tell whether you're... you've taken your medication, and basically this little pill talks to, it's powered by your stomach acid, and it talks to a patch that you wear like on your arm or something, that then talks to your phone, which then tells your doctor whether you've taken your pills or not.
No, it tells your wife to have nag you, that's what it does.
But partly this, I was reading Robert
Scoble. What do you do if you forget to take the pill that tells you that you've forgotten to take your pills?
But you've got to take that the first time. You just take it the first time. Actually,
it can't stay in your stomach forever.
Sorry?
That sounds dangerous.
It can't stay in your stomach forever.
Actually, is it? Wait a minute, maybe I've got this wrong. Maybe it's that the pill has this little thing inside it. Yeah, maybe that's it. So yeah, then everyone kind of goes through and gets...
Yeah, and it transmits to the thing on your arm, which then transmits to the doctor, who then slaps you over the head when you haven't taken your pills. Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
you see,
with this Moti C and the actuators they've got on here, the pills will be able to walk into your mouth on their own.
Convenient.
Yeah, this is quite cool. Can you imagine the possibilities with Lego bricks with these things?
Well, actually, I have got another story.
Have you tried swallowing a Lego brick?
Yeah, well, actually, my my old middle daughter, I once found a Lego brick in her nappy that had managed to make it all the way through.
Was it how many? No, hang on. How many blocks? Was it one or was it eight?
It was one of the small round ones.
That's I'd have been impressed with an eight block.
Well, how about this then? As you know,
and it's got a two block stuck in his nose when he was kid.
It came out like a Millennium Falcon at the end.
Yeah.
As you don't seem to be too impressed with that, because I've
no, we are it. Impressed with that. Donald Pleasance is rolling in his grave, mate.
I've just posted another story, which, in fact, as we're talking about Lego, is about Lego robots that can solve Rubik's cubes. And that actually, you've got to watch that video. That really is good, actually.
I've seen robots that solve Lego puzzles, Rubik's cubes before.
Yeah, well, the reason this one is pertinent is because apparently these people have created a Lego robot to solve the largest Rubik's Cube that you can get. They're going for a record this weekend, I believe. And this is going to try and solve the largest. The record is that a robot has, in the fastest time, solved a really large Rubik's Cube. I mean, if you look at it...
It is immense.
It is. But the last 30 seconds or the last 20 seconds of the video, he puts a normal Rubik's Cube and it's there's a camera at a mobile phone, a smartphone that's watching, obviously taking pictures and images of a Rubik's Cube. And it solves this Rubik's Cube really, really fast. And that actually, I was more interested in that than the Lego one at the start.
I solved the old Rubik's Cube in 42 moves. That's my
42
record.
Moves. I can't remember
That's the lowest I've ever done it in. 42 moves.
I was really young when the Rubik's Cube came out, and my mum thought I was. My mum thought I was a child genius because I managed to solve it. But all it was I'd sat underneath the dining room table for half an hour peeling the stickers off and putting them back on again.
I was just going to say, my mum thought I was a cheat when I solved it.
I've never solved a Rubik's Cube in my life.
Really.
No, I'm a Rubik's Magic kind of guy. Does anyone remember that?
You pull it apart and then put it back together again.
Yeah. No, I'm the Rubik's Magic guy, the little flappy thing. That was the better one.
No,
was that the? It was like flat and it was like...
That was it, yeah, and you like flipped it over and like little fish wires in, didn't it?
Snake.
Yeah, it was like mirrors and stuff, wasn't it? It was kind of shiny mirrors.
Yeah, that was impressive. Yeah. So if it could solve one of those, I'd be impressed.
But I think it's all the sides were mirrors, so I don't understand how you could possibly solve
it. I don't remember what they're talking about either.
You could get all the colours right. I didn't know what that was.
That was
supposed to be a joke. I'm sorry, that fell flat.
Ewan, don't walk through US Customs with Wheatley. I can see a cavity search coming on. Windrider's calling us a bunch of pillocks. And I can't say that about Richard Gere, Chris. Don't type that. There's no way I can repeat that. Bronwyn says she used to cheat so hard on Rubik's Cube when I was a kid. How can you? What's easy cheating compared to hard cheating with the Rubik's Cube?
Well, dismantling it against changing the stickers, I guess.
Oh, okay. Soft versus the hard. There we go.
hard cheating is that you don't actually complete it. Still, that's hard. Isn't
can
it?
We go back to Donald Pleasance riding in a submarine inside my body? Because that is a cool story.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, guys. You seem to have dismissed that rather quickly, but I think that's a good story, dude.
I worked all night to find that.
Oh, mate, you just got to think of all of the possibilities of these little machines inside your bodies, the stuff you could do. You could build. You could use these little machines to stretch your cornea and your retina and stuff. Not your retina. I know what it's called. Cornea. I think I want to say cornea. But, you know, to focus and stuff, the lens on your eye, to focus.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You can be bionic.
You can have them massaging your muscles overnight, so you wake up with a six-pack and massive biceps and stuff.
Yeah. This is where Bionics will be coming from, and this mic stuff, definitely.
I think more people in the chat room are thinking about a different kind of muscle.
we
neatly avoided that conversation.
The front and the rear need to be magnetized. Negative and positive.
Yeah, definitely.
Gaz, fantastic story, mate. I got to say, the micro engine thing that I found on BBC, the tiny motors story, said that this is the way that bacteria already propel themselves around your body.
I hadn't seen that.
Life imitating art. There you go. Imitating life. Nanomotors exist in nature too. An example of the tail on a bacterium that moves it around. There you go.
Yeah, well, it's nice that we finally moved up to like engines of any kind now, because I remember reading about it some, what could it be, 15 years ago, they've had basically a gearbox in molecular size, which was incredible at the time. And that combined with this engine and even more control technology, and we can really have these nanobots fully functional in a reasonable time frame, maybe 10 years.
Well, you got graphene, haven't you? I mean, that's the big thing. Once graphene hits, I mean, graphene from Salford University, once that hits a kind of production market and someone's not taking stupid amounts of money for the copyright on the technology associated with that, graphene is really going to change the world. I mean, did you see the story this week about the 32 gig graphene strips? They're like you remember those little post-its that you used to get that were for writing notes in annotations in books? They were only sort of a centimetre wide, but sort of 4 centimetres long. Well, they're talking about one of those that's 32 gig as a USB device.
Wow.
Because it's graphene.
These things.
So what's graphene? Excuse my ignorance.
Graphene is, now this is the interesting bit, a bloke at Salford University was writing with his pencil and realised that if he wrote with his pencil and then put a piece of sellotape on it and lifted it off, he got ultra-thin graphite, and that's the basis of his research into graphene. But graphene effectively is, I mean, it's phenomenally stronger than carbon fibre and infinitely more conductive, and it's just a miracle substance. But it was definitely invented by Salford University, and there's applications in people's minds about how it can be used, but I don't think there's anything out there that's practical yet. So,
right, okay.
Cool.
I think the manufacturing is still the problem.
Yes.
Bronwyn's just suggested that Paul's waiting for a reference, but I'm not sure that reference is going to come. So there you go.
Badumch.
Oh, I forgot about that bit. Yes, of course. Moving on. Who's next?
I'll go next. So my story is around the Amazon Prime price hike. So a couple of weeks ago, I think we discussed this, but the Amazon UK price was increased, but that was because Amazon Instant Video, which was formerly Love Film, was added in the package, and it went from £49 to £79. And there was some discontent over the internet about it, but that seems to have broadly died down. But the bottom line is you were getting a service that used to be £6 a month for the equivalent of £30 a year. Which I'm not going to say most people were happy with, but certainly
that is a better deal, though.
It is a better deal, and the stuff died down. I noticed a couple of people kind of tweeting out saying, well, do we not have an option? And it wasn't an option, it was just wrapped in. However, today, Amazon have increased the price in the States by $20, which is 12 quid. And the only reason I know that is because I was doing the stuff earlier on. I've double checked. It's when you Google it, it's the same exchange rate as I got today. Anyway, they're not getting anything extra for it. Amazon just appear to have pumped up the price a little bit for just cause. There's nothing extra. There's nothing new. Amazon in the States have had Amazon Instant Video for a couple of years, I reckon. It's been a while. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. Now, it still seems to be that, I mean, $99 is still relatively cheap, in my opinion.
Well, I was just going to play devil's advocate and just suggesting that really you're doing your fellow Scotsman no favours here, dude, by being a bit of a tight ass.
No, that's the Aberdonian in me.
Y'all being a bit of a tight ass.
What?
But, what?
Did you not see the tweets accent earlier?
Is that a Falkirk accent?
No, folks from Falkirk can't communicate in English. I don't think there's too much of a problem, but I've seen on Twitter quite a bit of backlash today around people complaining about this $20 price hike. And I mean, maybe I just use Prime more than your average human being, and I do, but I find it is an amazing service that has paid for itself multiple times over in my house.
I this is going to sound really blasé, and I don't mean it to be, but I didn't even know that I paid for it. I know, it just says Prime, and I go, yeah, shit, we'll have that next tomorrow. That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I did that, and it cost me X pounds some time ago, but...
50, yeah.
I haven't noticed, I have to say, and I love getting shit the next day.
Yeah, but we get charged every year, but I don't actually remember ever getting charged.
I've never seen a bill for it. No? Go on, Paul.
But so what is now Amazon Prime Video is what was Love Film.
Yeah.
Is that right? So what happens to people who were just paying for Love Film? Are they automatically enrolled into Prime?
No, the way it works is because I had two Love Film accounts, which has caused me no end of problems. But basically what happens is you get an email that says it's now changed, and basically nothing's going to change. Absolutely everything's going to happen, but you are now... Your payment is now being bumped up to 79 pounds a year, and you're getting Prime as well. And basically, it's a link that you have to click on that then asks you to log in your Amazon account. It then links the two and then takes you to a page where you can drop off the DVD subscription if you still have that.
Oh, so you can opt out then?
Yeah, you can opt out. You can opt out of the DVD subscription, which reduces your cost.
That's going to be a very confusing to a lot of people who don't know what's going on. We know.
It was confusing. Yeah.
Yeah. We know what's going on, you know, obviously following the tech news and things. But normal people who have just been getting their DVDs from Love Film are going to be absolutely flummoxed about what's going on now.
Sorry. Carry on.
But obviously, you know, they get it's the next day delivery and everything else thrown in. But I think a lot of people are just going to quit, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it has been kind of been advertised to a degree. The Love Film envelopes for about the last 6 months have been rebranded with Amazon. So, I mean, they were getting clues that Amazon had bought it. And then they've got this email. It's relatively straightforward. You click on a link, you type in your Amazon password, and then it kind of links everything together. Maybe it was different for me because I was already a Prime subscriber. I don't know quite how the experience would work if you were not a Prime subscriber. I don't know if everything just stays as it is, except you're now having to use your Amazon login for everything. I'm not sure. But
so if you're an Amazon, if you're a Prime subscriber, do you automatically get the films?
Then? Well, it automatically bumps up your annual cost and you start getting Amazon or what was Love Film streaming. And if you have a Love Film account, it just merges the two. But the problem comes in, like me, I had two because I had one that we used for the Gamer Show for renting games. And I have nothing to do with it. I don't really know what to do with that. So basically what I'm going to have to do is open a second Amazon account, link the Gamer Show's Love Film subscription to that account, and then close that account down, which is a little bit awkward. But then I'm probably very edge case to have two Love Film subscriptions.
So are the DVDs in the post dead now then? Is it all online now?
No, you can still do DVDs.
What's a DVD?
Says the man who's got 130 down. People who don't have that kind of bandwidth.
No, hang on a second, because here you go. Just to prove that I do know what a DVD is before anyone sends me a frigging email. There you go, there's a few blank ones. There's a double rewrite and then there's two. See, look. I made a video, if you remember, for the Kismet.
Yes, you did.
Oh, yeah.
So I made the video, I've stuck it on YouTube, and Milan's happy, the guy that owns the Kismet. He said to me, could I have a DVD and then I can play it in the TV that does it? I said, well, has the TV got USB? He says, yeah, no worries. I have made every frigging format of video that I can possibly manage of any size that I can find. I'm not kidding you. Ian Mitchell, who's in the chat room, will back me up on this. We went over with a data stick and I had 12 movies on there. Okay. He couldn't play one of them using this poxy TV. He said, I'm going to have a DVD. I have sat here and I have tried for 8 times now. I've wrecked 8 of these DVDs trying to burn a DVD. I have no software to burn a DVD.
On your Mac, yeah.
On my Mac. And I just, yeah. I've tried doing image right, I've tried doing all sorts, and all it does is it spits the disc out with it half written saying it doesn't work, awfully sorry, and then when I put it back in, it goes, no, this has already been written on. All right, well, what's on it? Sod all.
You got Windows, you got Bootcamp on your Mac?
No, I have not. Jesus Christ, Paul.
Do you have an older Mac that would still have iDVD or older...
Or Toast.
Something like that.
No.
No.
I can't... No, this is 2014, and I can't burn a frigging DVD. I've got DVDs.
I don't actually
here.
Have the facility.
I bought 100 DVDs about 8 years ago. I got 75 of the bastard things still in here in the cupboard. If it wasn't for the fact I'd wrecked half of them, I'd have 80.
So he's got no film then. He's got no movie for his.
He can watch it on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
I'm sure he's spitting in my curry now, but I mean.
Did you get a curry every time you went over, though? That's the question.
What, free?
Yeah.
No, I didn't make it for a free curry. I made it because he's a lovely bloke and it's a fantastic restaurant.
It's a good restaurant.
Batwinch came last week and we took Angela, her next door neighbour, over, and even Angela said, oh, this is good.
Yeah, it does.
Got to come to the Bash. Bash is 11th and 12th of July. We're going to put the tickets up when I get back from Macworld. You can get in, and 11th in the evening is a curry. Gaz, you went for the curry?
Yep.
You came just for the curry. This man drove from Northampton to Birmingham just for the curry. It was that good. And was it that good?
It was that good.
It was that good. There you go. See?
It's good curry.
Yes, indeed. Will you fly from Sweden, Streak?
I'm contemplating it, I must say. If possibility arises, I will try to make it. No promises, but I'll do my best.
Check our donations and see if we can subsidise your trip.
Do it.
Get the Streak over, because he's done enough podcasts. He should be over here.
Yep.
Go on.
Can I just I just wanted to add something on the end of that Amazon story. How many of you guys use Subscribe and Save? Amazon Subscribe and Save.
I have no clue what that is. Tell us what it is, Paul.
I find this incredible. This is the biggest secret, which is bizarre, being that they're a company that needs to make profit. Subscribe and Save is the biggest, most amazing secret that Amazon has in its arsenal. What it is you could go on, and any shopping that you would normally do in your Tesco's, your Sainsbury's, or equivalents outside the UK, you can do it, as long as it's not perishable, on Amazon, and it gets delivered to your door free postage in bulk. So I sat one Saturday night when I have really exciting Saturday nights. I sat one Saturday night with a spreadsheet and worked out, based on like Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Costco and all that kind of stuff, and worked out that Amazon Prime Subscribe and Save is cheaper for almost all of the
things. Dude, you're never going to get laid again.
Almost all of the... I've already got one.
I'd save that story for the bar at Macworld one night, mate, when you're chatting to some hottie and you go, do you know what? I got a spreadsheet out one night.
But point is... It's a big spreadsheet.
I'll tell you what, mate. If we go out dancing, you're with Adam Christensen, not me.
I've got a massive column.
Yeah, I had that checked out.
You're running interference on a mate.
But it's cheap. And basically, all you do is you go on and you like say, I want kitchen roll, toilet roll, dishwasher tablets, or something like that, and I wanted a box of them delivered to me every 3 months, and they just come through the post and they just charge you for them, and you don't have to ever worry about it. You could get cat food and soap and toothpaste. It's amazing. It is incredible, and it is the biggest kept secret in Amazon's thing.
How much is a life, Paul? if you subscribe to Get a Life, how much does that cost? Does it come every month as well?
Well, you see, the time I would have spent wandering around Costco buying this stuff, I get to go and play my computers instead.
Good man.
He gets to play at home on his own.
That's my cool thing this week. Subscribe and Save. I've actually gone. It's got its own webpage. amazon.co.uk/gp/subscribe-and-save.
And the more you put on there, the bigger the discounts go as well. So, like, once you go over 15 items, then I think you get kind of 5% off. Nappies. If you've got a child in nappies or an older person in nappies.
You see, the more people that do this, eventually Prime will be costing you hundreds of pounds to become a member.
Dude.
This is awesome.
Oh, man. I'm Lovely. With the boring ginger.
Do you work from home?
No, I don't.
Oh,
with
Christ.
Amazon Prime, you soon don't have to leave your house even to do the most mundane things like go shopping.
Yes!
I don't want to do all that kind of crap.
Bookery says, do Amazon ship girlfriends? Jimfro Jim says, cat food, soap and toothpaste. It sounds like a prison. Mitchell says, soap, my God, at last.
There's your target audience.
You all laugh, but I bet you all check this out.
No.
I would if there was something even remotely similar to Amazon in my neck of the woods, but they just shut down what little they have here, as far as I know. There's no more Love Film up here, at least.
Straight, you got off light, mate. That's all I can say.
Incredible.
Wheatley, I don't mind that you actually know about this. It's just the enthusiasm that kind of really kills me. I just want to know if you do get to sit me on the Delta flight over to San Francisco. We're not talking about this.
Yes.
And if you bring the spreadsheet, I'm going to find a way of printing it out when we're in San Francisco. And you'll be cavity searched to get the spreadsheet out, mate. I promise you.
I think I suddenly understand why that plane vanished.
Oh, no. Too soon. Editing. Gaz, you've got a story. Righty, come on, mate. Let's have your story. Come on, save us.
Go on, then.
Save us from indexing deals on Amazon.
Right. What do we all think about cloud storage? Do we trust it or do we not?
No.
No.
Well, I don't distrust it, but the problem I've got with it is, the laptop that is sat here.
Yep.
Is 2 terabytes.
Yeah.
So I signed up for Carbonite and it was great service, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining in the slightest about Carbonite. I paid me $79 and in a year until it renewed, it never put the computer in the cloud.
Ah, well, that's just a bad experience, isn't it?
Well, no, I don't suggest that Carbonite is a bad service, but it's not built for, and the cloud is not built for an amount that's significant. See, if you make I got a point here. I run a WordPress server, thanks to Sarah. Sarah's in Ireland at the moment. How you doing, girl? And basically, I put movies up that I make for customers, and I send them a link so that they can download it.
Yeah.
There's a 500 megabyte limit on that. Well, that's 7 minutes of video, 6 minutes of video at 1080. Well,
that's not good because my drinking buddy Jeffrey Jim's in the chat room, and I suggested Carbonite to him today. So, Jim, don't do what I said.
No. How big is Jim's hard drive? And that's not a euphemism for anything else.
He's got terabytes of data that he needs to get up, so maybe
no. He'll never get it up. There is no way of getting. I never got a full terabyte up with a year with Carbonite.
Okay.
So I just subscribed to something yesterday, and apologies, Paul, if this is maybe what you were about to talk about, but I just subscribed to a thing called Crash Plan. Have you guys seen that?
No.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah,
yeah, I've heard of it.
Why Crash Plan is better than Carbonite? Because I've tried all of these things. And I'm absolutely paranoid about losing photographs of like my kids and stuff like that.
That's my biggest fear as well, yeah.
Yeah. Because all of my photographs, well, Kirsty prints out a few, but most of them are on hard drives and things. CrashPlan allows you to back up external hard drives as well as internal hard drives, which as far as I'm aware, last time I checked some of the other services, you can do that. But the main two things about CrashPlan is it actually supports, if you've got two people, like, so for example, I take a hard drive to my dad's house now and again, it can actually sync those two between those two locations. So I could take a hard drive there and it can sync between the two. But the other thing is you could post them a hard drive of all your data on it, like secure courier and all this kind of stuff, which then means that you don't have to do that initial upload, which is quite cool.
Yeah. But the reason I mention it is obviously there's been a bit of a battle with cloud kind of companies giving their services away. But today, Google Drive have slashed all their prices.
All right.
At the moment, Google Drive are doing $1.99 a month. They're doing 100 gig, which I think is a pretty good deal. And obviously, in the industry that I work in, we get so many people who come in and their PCs have crashed and their hard drives have failed. Have you got a backup? No, I haven't. And I asked the wife as a layman question today. I said, obviously, conversion $1.99 is but £1.19 at the moment. I asked, would you pay $1.19 a month to have all your stuff backed up off-site? And she was like, oh, yeah, definitely I would, because at the moment I pay SkyDrive, I think £6 a year for 30 gigs. But would we all pay for 100? Well, I think it's 100 gigs is $1.99 a month.
10 terabytes
a terabyte
is $20.
$9.99 a month. But one, is that a good deal? And two, do we trust the cloud enough to back up our data? Because I had a good chat with my mate Jim today, and obviously having an offsite backup is very important. Is cloud the way to go?
Well, Google, just to give the figures that are out here, I mean, if you just have a look at what I've called up here on the screen, you can get 15 gig free, $1.99 for 200 gigabytes, but you go up $100, so you're only talking 60 quid, 55 quid. It's 10 terabytes.
It's not bad, is it?
10 terabytes of data can go into the cloud, but how long does it take? I mean, are you talking about a basic file transfer here? So if I've got 10 megabits a second up, I'm going to get 10 megabits a second to Google Drive, or are you suggesting that, like Carbonite, it's going to be limited to a trickle feed? Bronwyn in the chat room says, I thought there was a limit on the size of hard drive that Carbonite could handle. No, there isn't. It has to be an internal hard drive, though. As long as it recognises an internal hard drive, it's valid on Carbonite.
Yeah, but Google Drive works in the same way kind of SkyDrive and Dropbox work. You do initial upload, don't you? So obviously you've got to have the kind of turnover of uploading everything, but then it's just incremental backups after that when things change. So, you know, $99 for a year for 10 terabytes, that's actually quite good. But I'm not going to use the word muggles, but I'll use it anyway. But people just don't realise that these things are out there. But do we, as people who know about technology, would we recommend it to people as another backup? Because people just don't back up. It's people who don't know about technology don't back up their data. They just think what's on the spinning disk in their laptop or their hard drive is going to last forever. And I don't think it will. So for $99 for 10 terabytes, or, you know, $1.99 a month for 100 gig, it's worth it, isn't it?
It definitely is,
backup is still better than no backup.
Yeah. Unfortunately, exactly. Though,
Do we think that cloud backup has moved on enough to recommend to people that that's what they should be doing? Because for what, the $1.99 a month for the 100 gigs would cover a lot of people. It works out at £1.19. And you say to people, well, financially, what is it? You know, like Paul says, all his photographs, is £1.19 a month a sacrifice worth making to make sure all your stuff backed up off-site?
Yeah.
You've kind of got two questions, haven't you? The question is it cheap enough? I think the answer to that is definitely yes.
10 terabytes, 100 bucks, absolutely.
Yeah, the next issue is, and I think you kept trying to ask this question, is do we trust it?
Yeah.
So pictures, most people, I think, probably everyday, or muggles as you like to call them, would probably trust it and it'll do them some good. But would you trust it with the more important information? And that's the point which I think we all start to struggle with, because we know how easy it is to lose data and for data to start seeping out. But, you know, if everybody's doing it, it's like your house being robbed. You know, if you're the one that's unlucky, you're really going to find it, you know, hard to then recommend that to anybody. But for everybody else, it's probably fine.
And also, most of these services offer encryption of some kind.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if Google does. I'm assuming it has some kind of level of encryption, but the one that we were talking about before, Carbonite, and that Crash Plan actually offers three different levels of encryption, and it's encrypted before it goes up. Now, I'm sure Carbonite and things like that do similar things. But yeah, you're right. It's the same kind of thing. Is you keep the hard drive in your house and it could get burgled, or you keep it up in the cloud and it could get hacked. The only place you could do it is if you kind of download everything on a USB stick and bury it in your garden and hope for the best.
Yeah. I've done that.
That's my preferred system.
Yeah. It just came out of a pub conversation we had today, and it was just like, yeah, what if you have a fire or your external backup is stolen? £1.19 a month is worth it, but is cloud storage at a point now where we can truly trust it as a backup?
I think so.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. £1.19, 100 gig, that's a lot of data, isn't it?
Do you know, it's convenience, isn't it? If it makes people actually back up their data so they've got something and it's reliable, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I think I would rely more on these services to have a backup of the data that they're backing up than for somebody to say, all right, well, I've backed up to that disk which is sat next to my computer. Oh, dear, I've just had a power cut. Or something has destroyed both of those. They've been pinched. You've had a fire, whatever. It's gone forever. Whereas, you know, it's probably going to be more reliable to have some of the, you know, a cloud service who they have got a damn sight more backups than we're ever going to have. Yeah. I would think.
So if I was to do a round robin kind of thing, how are we all backing up our data right now?
So I do a time machine. I've got a super duper that's done monthly. I've got a time machine that runs all the time. I have Dropbox, pretty much all of my data is in Dropbox or Google Drive. And then I've just started this crash plan thing as well.
So you're primarily in the cloud, aren't you?
I mean, I use Super Duper. I've got a 4 terabyte external drive here that's sectioned into two terabyte drives, and one's my time machine, and the other one's my Super Duper, and pretty much that's my first go to. And then I've started testing this crash plan just literally like 4 days ago or something, to see how that gets on, and that's going to be my cloud storage. But pretty much all of my day-to-day is in Dropbox, and any project I'm working on or anything that I need on a daily basis is in Dropbox. And then when I leave a project, that then gets taken off and put into my NAS in the house, which also is synced up to CrashPlan.
Yeah, because that's what I'm doing. I've got like SkyDrive, Dropbox, I think copy.com, Box, but then all those folders I upload to my NAS as well. But obviously, there's also a convenience of having it in the cloud and accessing it from anywhere. You know, if you're out and about and you need a file, you can get it, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, but it's just that in my line of business doing IT support, it's just scary how many people just don't know have any sort of backup. It's just, you know, and obviously, this story's come out today about them slashing prices, but the normal people who don't back up aren't going to hear about it, are they? We're going to hear about it. We're talking about it, but normal people aren't backing up anywhere. And the amount of data, I don't know, you know, how many petaflops of data in this across the world are not being backed up that is vital data. It's quite scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's all about convenience. It's that word, convenience.
What are you doing, Ian?
Whose nose is on the screen?
I did that moments ago. many moments ago. What I've done is I've plugged in my HD camera here. I've used Skype to get a small view, but how would I get a full screen view of a webcam? There's no software, is there?
No.
It's the stupidest thing I've ever thought of. And I've only just thought of it. So I must be stupid. But I can show you what this screen's looking at by using something like Skype, but I can't call it up in Photo Booth. And I can't just give it a website address and say, go through a browser and look at what there is. But anyway, what I was going to say was, to the side here of my laptop, you'll see 3 of 4 drives that store photo and video. And they're in pairs and they're mirrored. I've got 2 Tuftek Geos as well that have duplicates of the footage on that I use on a day-to-day basis. And under here, this is a bit dark, I have to admit. But under here is a whole pile of 3 terabyte drives that are all either individual or raided together in enclosures. So in total, I've got about 24 terabytes of storage kicking on those sets of drives. But that's nice. Well, it's nice, but there's an awful lot of video in there as a necessity now, and an awful lot of images that are scanned or are historical or whatever. But I mean, they're not the amount that I've got would not exist in the cloud, and the amount that I've got in terms of, and this is my real question, is not necessarily just whether I get it backed up or not, whether I trust the service or not, or whether I can physically get it into the cloud or not. It's whether I can get it back or not that's the key part. And that's where it falls down rapidly. Because if you're starting to talk about, you know, I use a server that Sarah set up for me for transmitting videos to customers. But because it's based on WordPress, I've got a 500 megabyte limit on that. So at 7 minutes, that's 560 megabytes. It doesn't go up to the cloud anymore. It has to go through Dropbox. Dropbox takes forever to sync 500 megabytes. It's bloody awful.
Mm-hmm. So it's something like Project Glacier from Amazon being more, yeah, being more appropriate for you.
No, because that's, more that's archive, trickle, isn't it? Though. That's, no, because it's trickle. Yeah. It's trickle again. What I want is when I send something up, I want 10 megabits a second, the maximum I can get, bang, it's all the way up there. And when I want it back, I want it back at 120. I don't want to piss around. Excuse the phrase there, but the accessibility of the information that you put in the cloud is what kills the cloud, because there's so many people putting so much up and so many people taking so much down that eventually at Paul at 2208 on the connection that he's got, he's struggling to do anything other than sustain a Skype call. I don't mean that.
There's a chance somebody's got Netflix running in the house.
Well, no, but to be honest, mate, I mean, I'm not trying to criticise unfairly here, but you are probably one of the weakest connections that we've got on the panel. Uh-huh. And you could, I mean, yours is frozen at this end.
No, I'm just staying very, very still.
Yeah. It's gone.
Yeah. But you have a very unique use case. I'm kind of talking about the public at large, you know.
The fact that
people who don't back up at all.
Oh, come on. Hang on. Let's forget about file size. Let's just go back to basic Apple iCloud. And let's say you've got a spreadsheet that you want to put up into the cloud and you want to share with three colleagues. How doable is that?
Google Drive, without a doubt. That is the only option as far as I'm concerned.
Not an Apple service. Apple have not got the cloud correct. They've not got anywhere close to the cloud correct.
They don't do that.
And I don't suppose that even Google have, to be honest.
No. iCloud is the worst cloud service I've experienced, easily. The best cloud service I've actually used is OneDrive.
Jufro Dream's making a point. Data storage is the oil of the tech world.
Yeah, he had 2 points at lunchtime. He'd always say
no, I think that's quite prophetic. I think that's very good. Definitely is. But having said that, 99 for 10 terabytes a month is a good old fare.
Yes.
Not bad at all. Hands up, who's going to go for cloud storage from now on, then?
I already do. I love cloud storage, despite
already,
the pun.
Already do.
I've been looking at it for a long time, but I think that I've got the same problem you've got, Ewan, and that's the upload and download speed. You know, if it takes me forever, my backup is I've got in a part of the house which is extremely safe. It's in a garage separate, so I've got to have two separate fires. That backs up a time machine. I've got a separate file near the computer which actually backs up using Super Duper. But then I've got another machine, and to your point, Paul, I actually use Carbon Copy Cloner, because that way I'm not relying on just one piece of software as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've actually got another piece of software doing that clone, which then gets taken off site, and I rotate that. So I'm kind of doing it off site, but not into the cloud yet. But I do keep looking at the cloud as an option. Yeah. It's just the fact that, you know, it'll take so long to get up there. The prices are right. I think it's convenience again, and I just haven't got around to doing it.
I mean, I've sat in Holborn in London all day today. I've got no 4G signal. Give me 4G, I've got access. You don't give me 4G, I haven't.
Yeah.
And I'm not sat in a Faraday cage. I'm sat in an 18th century building that's brick. So it's not the Faraday cage that's causing the problem. It's not Three Network are not supplying Holborn with 4G network at the moment. That's it. Plain and simple. Not good.
But we would trust it.
I think it would be one of my backups, but it wouldn't be the backup.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just, you know, the What was the little Microsoft phone? Microsoft ended up recovering all the data for it. Again with a T. I'll say Tremolo, but it's not Tremolo. But that was only going back, 2 years, something like that. And everyone who had one of those devices lost all their data, the little Sidekick thing that was slide over. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that's not going back that far. Not that far. Whose turn is it? Have you not done one, Streak?
No, I believe I am the last one.
Cool.
Unless there's someone.
Well, no, I've got one, but it's not going to take long.
Okay. Well, this is just a small little story here. I thought it was interesting. Google has apparently bought a company called Green Throttle Games, and they were apparently specialized in making controllers primarily for Android devices. So a physical controller to deal with all the game activity on your Android device instead of having to suffer the often painful and junk on-screen controls. So,
are these the guys that kind of cracked the idea of having more than one controller linked to one Android device? So you can have like a four-player game on the same Android device?
Could be. I haven't researched Green Throttle Games that much. I just know that they're a controller manufacturer and they had their own software. They could be the ones you're talking about. I'm not 100% sure.
I think they are.
Purchased for an undisclosed sum.
Mm-hmm.
And industry figures have speculated that the move could pave the way for Google to develop its own set-top TV box.
Mm.
The Google console.
Like they did before, but which again, was shit.
Yes. Oh. Because, as we all know, Eric Schmidt said famously that all smart TVs, I believe that was called, would be shipping with the Google whatchamacallit built in, and that still hasn't happened, and that was some year ago now.
Yeah.
I mean, still.
Do you see Android ever becoming... I mean, Paul, you host the Gamer Show, so you're perfectly the one place to start the answer on this. But do you ever see Android seriously contending in the gamer field at the kind of Xbox and PS4 level?
No, I don't see it at the Xbox and PS4 level. However, I still see it as maybe a Wii competitor. The Ouya I had great hopes for, and it fell flat on its face. I still have one. I think I played it kind of half a dozen times. I gave it to Sam for a test, and I believe it. He told me the other day that he'd actually scratched his dog's back with it once, but that's as far as he got. I think it's got a chance if they could kind of get the whole controller thing working. It's ridiculous, but the controller makes so... Because that's the bit you're interacting with to actually play the games. The controller has to feel... Right, it has to feel good, and the Ouya controller just felt cheap and nasty. And I think if they can get the controller right, and they start getting some, not even AAA titles, but some kind of AA titles, or even single A titles on there, or even some old titles, so maybe your Grand Theft Auto 3 or something like that, so that you can play it on the big telly, I think they could have a chance, but I don't see it compete with PS4 and Xbox by a long shot, but certainly Wii, I think it's a possibility.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's nothing stopping Android being a major gaming platform. Certainly, well past iOS. I mean, you might argue it's past iOS already.
Yeah, other than making the AAA titles have to write for that platform, a third platform, that would be the only thing.
It's not an easy port, then.
I wouldn't have thought so. No, as far as I'm aware, it's a fundamentally different architecture, but. I'm not into that kind of stuff to that level.
Is this just a preemptive move? Because you've got like everyone's going, Apple's going to release an iWatch, and then Samsung released a load of watches that are rubbish, and then they're talking about obviously in iOS 7 we've got controller support, and they're saying that next Apple TV is going to have gamer controllers. This is just Google kind of jumping on the bandwagon before Apple do to kind of get it into the living room before they do.
Mm.
Theoretically.
I think there's a market there for that kind of thing, though. I really do. I don't think it's trying to take space from Microsoft and Sony, but I think there's space for that kind of casual, I just want to sit and play Plants vs. Zombies, but on the big telly with a controller, just kicking back and relaxing and doing that. I think there's a market there for like a 99 quid box that does your Netflix, does your Plex, and also allows you to play the games on the big screen. And like four of your kids can all sit around and play a game. All you need to do is buy four controllers and this, like, 100 quid set-top box or something like that. I think there's a market there.
You're absolutely right, because I've got Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City on my phone and my iPad, and on the touchscreen, it's really awkward to play, I find.
But if I
could have like a controller like the Logitech ones that are out there at the moment, and then just plug my phone into it and use that as a controller and project that to my Apple TV, I'd love playing that again.
That would
really work. But the touchscreen version of like Grand Theft Auto doesn't really work, does it? It's a lot more awkward than it was on a PS2, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah,
if I could project that to my Apple TV with some sort of actual controller that I could plug my iPhone into, that'd be a game changer.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So Bronwyn says they're preempting what Apple might be doing, because obviously, the controller code is already there, isn't it? The standard's already there. So if Apple actually don't actually do anything with this, they're going to lose out. I think they'd be silly not to do this.
Yeah, I think so.
Because people aren't really sold on the next generation console. A lot of people are staying with their Xbox 360 and their PS3s, aren't they?
Yeah, but that happened with the previous, with the PS1 and original Xbox as well. PlayStation 4 and Xbox One are both selling better than the 360 and the PlayStation 3 did at their launch. So as it stands just now,
it's all about inertia.
Yeah. But think about it as a competitor to the Wii U, because I mean, I think I've said on this show before, or maybe it's another one, but anyway, the whole idea of having that little touchscreen device as well as the big screen worked really well. It's just Nintendo didn't implement it very well. So they implemented it well, but they didn't execute it very well. But having that, so if you imagine the iOS games controllers that have come out, so you've got your phone and then you've got the buttons, so you've got the physical buttons and the D-pad and things like that, but you've also got your phone for your inventory for like RPGs or something, but then you can also stream the game up to your Apple TV. So you've then got a kind of a double level experience, you know, in a driving game that's like, I don't know F1 very well, but I know F1 steering wheels have got a lot of different stuff on them, but your screen there could be all the different functions on your F1 steering wheel, plus you've also got the physical buttons to actually control the car. And then in the big screen, all you're worrying about is just your heads up view. Those kind of things, I think, could make a massive impact.
Dual screen is phenomenal as an option.
Mm. Yeah.
But no one's done it properly apart from Real Racing 2, and that's it.
And I would say Zombie U on the Wii U did it really well, but it was very repetitive. The idea behind how they implemented it was good, but they just kind of went, oh, this is a really good idea, let's do it. Oh, I don't know what we're going to do with the rest of the game. Just keep repeating the same idea. Just keep going. Nobody will notice, don't worry. And it kind of didn't really work. But the whole idea when you were playing in the zombie game was you were having to look down at your controller for a deal with like taking things out of your backpack and things like that. But if a zombie was coming near you, you had no indication of the gamepad, and it added to the tension of the game because you were looking away from the screen. You couldn't see where the zombies were coming from, and you kept having to kind of look up as if you were kind of down on your knee in real life, emptying your backpack or something. It was implemented well, just the game was a bit crap long term. But doing stuff like that, I think there is a space there for that kind of stuff, kind of casual gaming dual screen thing. So I've ranted on. Sorry, this was somebody else's story.
No. The image that I found on the internet of Green Throttle has no screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a second screen device. That's the problem.
No. I'm just saying that would be an amazing. That would be something else that you could kind of take it forward with.
Yeah.
That kind of in the living room thing.
Well, I've got this thing here, which is I use for driving games. It's an F1 steering wheel for PlayStation. If you could take all of that and put it into my iPhone and my iPad mini screen and pump that to my Apple TV, I'd be laughing.
Yeah.
That's what they need to do. Obviously, I don't want these clunky kind of things anymore, and I don't use it anymore, so I'm taking the cobwebs off as I speak. But that's where the power of the Apple TV, if they move into games, is where it is, because using the iPhone as a controller doesn't work. If you've got an adapter you can plug into it and have your D-pad and all that sort of thing, but having that second screen is vital, I think. And I think that's why Google have bought this, because they can see this coming.
Mm. Very possible.
Interesting. We shall see.
Mm.
We shall see. But the second screen, I agree with Paul there. I mean, the Wii U, everyone thought it was just an extension to the Wii. So that's where it failed instantly.
I love my Wii U. It's just a bit kind of dead on arrival, unfortunately.
I don't have a huge story, I have to admit, but I was scrolling through today at lunchtime looking for a story that I thought would be good to cover tonight. And I found this one. Target reportedly knew about data breaches for 12 days mm-hmm. before taking action. They had a huge data breach. Thieves took Target's customer data, and if you are a customer of Target and you haven't gone and changed password for your online shopping and that kind of stuff, or changed your details, or emigrated to solve the problem of them burgling your house tonight, then you should. But the thing that actually made me stop was the picture. Because, A, why would people queue outside Target? I don't know. And the lady in the white trousers and the bloke in the blue jeans look a little bit like they're not really that bothered that they're queuing at Target. No? And all I could think of when I saw that picture was, I queue all night to get some. I queue all night to get some. I queue all night to get lucky. There you go. It's got nothing to do with the data breach. If you're a Target customer and you shop online with them, you should get off your lazy fat ass and go and buy it, because I'm afraid all your data's gone now anyway. There you go. And the girl in the white trousers is deeply in love with the bloke in the blue jeans. She's up all night to get some.
So have they got credit card details and all that sort of stuff, have they?
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Bring it back.
The story from Bloomberg said... Target not only shut off an automatic malware removal tool, but they sat on the breach and notification of it for 12 days, long enough for attackers to grab both card information and to cover their tracks as well. So you can't even find out who they were. While the store chain isn't confirming what happened at this stage, it notes that it's already revamping its security system and speeding up plans to accept chip-based payment cards, which are slightly more trustworthy. If true, though, the scoop suggests that Target could have easily prevented the theft and spared millions from financial headaches that now follow.
I wonder when the credit card companies will start to get involved with these people and start suing these shops for not trusting.
Well, you've got to say, if there's knowledgeable information that they sat for 12 days doing sod all, the credit card companies should be going, no, Target, you will foot the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they should.
Well.
Well, that's what happens with the 3D Secure at the moment. When you get 3D Secure, that's basically the shop or online retailer has kind of said, we're fairly confident our security is okay, but we're just going to make sure by making the banks put this 3D Secure in place, which is why you get in different banks branding and things like that. That's already in place in the digital world where a shop can go, you deal with the security because we're not 100% on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like they actually took no responsibility at all, because it says, through our investigation, we learned after the criminal ended our network, a small amount of their activity was logged and surfaced to our team. The activity was evaluated and acted upon.
Yeah, but a small amount of activity, according to the story I'm reading, says millions.
Yeah. Based on their interpretation and evaluation of the activity, the team determined it did not warrant immediate follow-up. It bloody well did, mate.
Ma, I got a bloke tapping at the window. Should I let him in?
Yeah. So they got the feet in the window. Let's let them all in the whole way.
Yeah, we shall see.
Jesus. 40 million payment card
records. They're looking for a new CIO soon, if they're not already.
Yeah, new IT bod.
Mm.
If you want to be in charge of Target security, then send an email to... No, don't.
Don't bother.
I want to talk about the Network Union, because the Network Union are a fantastic bunch. Now, I'm not allowed to say anything at all about the Network Union, because apparently I cock it up every week and I run the risk of the BT brand police getting me in trouble. So I'm not saying a word. But you should, if you've got a business account with BT, if you've got business broadband service, or if you've got you're thinking of getting a business broadband service, then you should check out Network Union. You can get to them through our sponsors page, but effectively, if you are already a BT customer and you sign up with the Network Union, you don't get any spam through your email folder. That's good. And also, they will add a layer of support over and above what you're already getting from BT. So it doesn't cost you any more. Your contract is still with BT. You pay the same monthly amount, but you get the added support on top of what you're already getting from BT of the network union. These guys know shed loads about LAN and wide area networks and that kind of stuff. And they can help you if you're a big business. They can help you if you're a small business as well. So just someone the size of me, if you've got a business broadband service into your premises, these guys will support you and bring their expertise to bear. So check them out. If you're a business customer or you're thinking of being a business customer with BT, go to our sponsors page, click through, send your details through to the network union, and they'll talk to you about whether they can help you. They could help you with resizing your pricing and all that kind of stuff. There's loads of stuff they can do to help. But check them out because they're brill. We love them to bits. They're supplying all the broadband in for the live shows and stuff like that. So we thank you very much for their support. And likewise, UK2, as ever, always, they are the network that support us, UK2.net. They will pick up all our bandwidth for every show that we push out every month, and we sap bandwidth like you wouldn't believe. Our server would cost us £400 a month just for storage and for bandwidth. So they pick that up. Thank you very much to them. We love them to bits. Please support UK2, and please support the Network Union using the click-throughs on the sponsors page, britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors. Thank you very much for their support. We'd be lost without people supporting us. And likewise, we've got a community thing going on. I want to do this every week because there's a lot of people who have hung around the network. They've given me advice personally on things like just collimating my telescope and that kind of thing. They're friends of the network, if you like, and friends of me. So please check out Woodpad. If you just Google The Woodpad, you'll find James and his little business, and he makes the most gorgeous, gorgeous pieces of wood. This one's an ash one, this one's a cherry one, and I've got three of these things. They're absolutely gorgeous. They're iPad supports and iPhone supports. Other phones do fit as well, and other pads do fit as well.
I've been to his workshop, seen him making them.
Super. And he's a craftsman, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely.
He absolutely is. There's the one that you can shove here. Look, the little lightning connector goes up through the centre. You see, peepo. There we go. So please support James. JC Woodpad is the Google. Also, CHNO Technology, Chris, go and support him because he's got an offer at the moment on the Tough Tech Duos, 10% off if you use BTN10 as your checkout code at his store. And Darren Griffin as well for GPS, Pocket GPS is his world, is his venture. PocketGPSWorld.com. Please check out Darren. He's been a very great supporter of the network over a very long period of time. If you're if you're in the market of doing something that's tech-based and you've got a business up and running and you want to send us the details, send them to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I will read out your participation in the network. Long-term supporters or supporters of the network, genuine supporters of the network, please only. If you're Johnny Come Lately, you'll be told to sling your hook and I won't read anything out. But thank you very much to the people that support this community because it is a community and I do value it very, very dearly. Very much indeed. Right, it's time for the cool thing. Streak, are you going to start us off, boy? Away you go.
All righty then. My pick is actually a bit relating to what we talked about not long ago with backups and stuff. I found a really nice little external hard drive, Western Digital Elements Portable 2 TB version, and it supports all the way up to USB 3.0. It's really nice because it's dead silent, and it's actually surprisingly fast, even on old USB 2.0 connections. And best of all, the price, you can find it around £90, which I think is very okay for the size. And it's a Western Digital quality drive, if you ask me. I think it's 3-year warranty on it. I don't know if that works in the UK, though.
Well, you're required to have 2-3 EU law anyway, so.
Oh, perfect.
There's a 1 TB version on Amazon at the moment at $98.95.
Not too bad, not too bad. I got the 2 TB version, and it's been really nice. Awesome to just chuck all over the backups on, and it just does its job. It's brilliant.
Shop around with this one for sure, because I found the 1 TB version in USB 2. But if you go and have a hunt, you can get the USB, you can get the 2 TB in USB 3 for £83.50.
I found it here in a few places around 90.
Yeah, Pixmania.com's got the USB 3 version for 2 terabytes at $83.50, VAT inclusive as well. So that's a really good deal.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Really
that's
good deal.
That's a good deal.
Excellent.
I like it.
I buy too much storage.
You can never have too much storage.
No, really. I buy too much storage, mate. It's like it's like handbags for women, mate. Meaning storage. It's just I can't walk past 2 terabytes without buying it, especially if it's something shiny and black.
But it's a really nice drive, and I've been enjoying it for like test driving it now for a few months, and it's just been awesome all the way.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of bad stories about Western Digital, but I've never had a Western Digital drive fail on me. So
me too.
Never. No, same here.
Never.
They've always been awesome.
Agreed.
Yeah, can't fault them. Good pick, sir. Well done. Waiters, what have you got for us, man?
I'm going to go with the game because I reluctantly bought it after Sam and Chiz did a review of it on Sunday, and it's the Stick of Truth, South Park, the Stick of Truth. Sam and Chiz have been going on about this game for months and months, and I'm not a fan of South Park. I watched it years and years and years ago when it came on. It never really hooked me at all. It just went a little bit too far for me sometimes, but. This game is superb. It's had me laughing out loud at times. Don't get me wrong, it's over the line at times. But it's so well done. There's points where you're kind of cringing, but equally you're being entertained at the same time. It's not for kids. You have to have a particular sense of humor for it to deal with this game, but it's one of the best games I've played since Grand Theft Auto 5. And it just came out on Friday there. I managed to pick it up at cdkeys.com, which is quite a good place for picking up games, because basically all they do is they email you the Steam code. And I picked it up. It was £17 I got it for. I noticed today it's back up to £24. And it goes everything from kind of £17 to £18 right up to about £40 on Steam. But if you're that way inclined and you've got a little bit of a childish sense of humour and you don't mind being offended, because you are going to get offended in this game, if you have that kind of sensibility, it's a superb little game. It's an RPG. It's as far as I mean, it's so well done, and it's very funny at times. But yeah, that's the Stick of Truth by South Park.
There you go. We're showing the trailer at the moment on the screen. Yeah. So. the gay bloke tied to the pole there, that kind of gave it away really as being slightly offensive, perhaps. If you were,
yeah, I mean, there are some key moments that you just kind of get, did they really just say that? You know, but yeah, as long as you leave your sensibilities at the door, then it's
Bookery and Wind Rider are saying Western Digital drives are not the good thing. The enclosures fail before the drives do, but I've got to say, touch wood, no worries yet. Gaz, what have you got for us, man?
Problem.
Oh, go on.
I needed some noise in my kitchen, so I've actually bought a pair of speakers, and I've heard quite a lot of very good stories with these. This is just one of them, but it's the Audio Engine A2 speaker.
All right.
Which I am going to be putting up on the top of our cupboards that we have in the kitchen, and basically connecting an Airport Express up to them so that Mrs. G can quite easily from her phone then access the music that she wants and just get it playing nice and loud in the kitchen. Because at the moment, there are no reasonable speakers in the kitchen. There are no speakers in the kitchen. And she has to blast it from either the living room or the lounge.
Right.
And that's not really that conducive to a happy household, especially when the youngest daughter is trying to work in one of those rooms. Mm. So I'm going to pop those on top of the shelf, hook them up to Airport Express, and away we go. I've already tested them, and the sound is superb. Good, so man. Looking forward to getting that set up. So Audio Engine A2 speakers, not cheap.
Price, I was gonna say,
not cheap.
Price is,
but well, you can get them from anywhere about 110 to about £140
each, or a pair.
No, it's a pair.
That's very good then.
It's a pair, and it's a good quality sound, and they're, you know, that's a solid, that is, I'm not sure the weight of it is, but you know, it's a solid piece of equipment, and connectors, reasonable, really good quality connectors. Everything about it is good quality. So
excellent. A2, you say?
A2. Audio Engine A2. I'll send you a link.
Thank you, mate. Very good. And last but not least, Righty.
Hello. Well, as you know, I do a lot of IT support. A lot of that IT support is doing it remotely. And we used to do it using LogedIn, but I don't know if you know, the other month that logged me in, cut their free support. So I was looking for an alternative, and there's now a Google Chrome extension called Chrome Remote Desktop. So if you want to remote it to someone else's PC, as long as they're running Chrome and this extension, you can then log in and remotely administer their PC.
Is it as good as things like TeamViewer and that kind of stuff? Or
yeah, it's like TeamViewer, but obviously TeamViewer, because obviously I work for an institution, and obviously there are limitations on what you can do on the free version. So you got to buy an enterprise version if you want to talk to people outside our organisation. But if they've got Chrome running at their end with this extension, and you've got Chrome running at your end, you can basically do everything you do in TeamViewer or log me in with this app. So it'll give you a code that you can then send to the person you want to log you in, and they can then go and do everything else. But obviously the most important thing about it is you can be on Mac, Linux, PC, or even a Chromebook, as long as it's running Chrome. So you've actually got a cross-platform remote access tool you can use across any computer, basically, that runs Chrome. And it's absolutely free. So I'll put a link in the chat room. So if you're looking for, if you're doing kind of IT support family and friends, and you don't want to go to the problems of installing TeamViewer, because sometimes it's a bit of a pain to get people to install an app. Installing extensions sometimes a little easier. So just great for if you're supporting family and friends.
Reviews are saying generally good, but there's a question over whether it doesn't work well with dual monitors. What's your experience of that?
I haven't had an issue. Generally, I've done it with people with laptops at the moment, but you know, for a free app, for a free extension, gives you all the kind of functionality that the paid apps do, then not a bad little thing at all.
Totally good. I don't have a pick of the week. I have a pass of the week, which is Jelliskins. Unfortunately, Jelliskins make great, fantastic products. The product itself, I can't fault. That's not the issue. But they block you in terms of the fact that you have to go with their USPS service, which links to UPS, or you have to go with UPS themselves. And UPS charge the highest amount for import brokerage into the UK that there is, £11. It's cost me £18 for a Jelliskin. Jelliskins have done nothing wrong, apart from the fact they make me use UPS, and it cost me £17 to import it, as well as costing me £12 to post it as well from the US. So, and I went to their European operation, and the European operation charges €38. Including postage, which is as bad as the US cost. So Jelliskin's fantastic product, absolutely wonderful product. It's absolutely adoringly good, but they need to sort out the shipping, because their shipping sucks, and the European operation is either taking the piss, or is getting hawked by the franchise fee that the US are creaming off them. I did have an email from the lady at Jelliskins suggesting that it was the European operation suffered because of high import taxes. And I'm like, no, hang on. Based on the quantity of import, surely the unit value would go down. I don't see that it would be at least as expensive as an individual importing. So I'm not having that. Sling your own.
Have you ever had a look at Reship?
No, someone suggested Blinkbox as well as a really good process, but you've got Reship.
Yeah, I use Reship. I've used it for a couple of things, and I really like it. It doesn't really work on kind of cheaper things. When you do, they don't open the box, so they ask you how much the value is, so that kind of determines the import cost. Read into what I'm saying there as you will. I quite like it for that.
Now, because the thing with Blinkbox is you can actually store things up, and then you can say, right, yeah, ship it now, and you've got this bulk package that comes over with all of the things in all at once. Is Reship the same kind of thing, or is it one item retail?
I've never done it with more than one item, but the gentleman who told me about this said that you can do that, but I've never tried it. I've only ever kind of been buying one thing at a time.
Right. Okay.
Because I'm thinking about doing it for the new Roku stick that's coming out. That's $50 in the States and £50 in the UK. And I've worked out that it's actually going to be cheaper for me to get reshipped to punt a $50 one over to me.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
The thing that gets me is we've got this flat, an apartment in San Francisco for when we go out to Macworld. I want to get a ton of stuff sent there, but I'm not going to be there to receive it and sign for it. So it's kind of pointless.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of gutted because this Roku stick doesn't come out until the week after we're there. Oh. I was thinking, oh my God, I could buy like half a dozen of them. I can easily make my money back on these. But no, it's a week later.
Cool. Where can we get a hold of you then, Streak?
Same place as always, streakmachine.com, and from there you can find all my other adventures online, pretty much.
Excellent. Where are you, Mr. Wheatley?
At Paul Wheatley on Twitter, and you can also find me on the Gamer Show and the Pocket Show on this network. And I believe you might find me at Macworld in a couple of weeks, week and a bit, in fact.
Yes, and you'll find him at Charles de Gaulle Airport looking for me.
Yes.
At 9 a.m. on Monday the 24th.
Yeah, I don't think it should take me too long to get my way around all the bars in Charles de Gaulle.
Thanks, man. Reputation precedes me. Gazmaz, where are you, sir?
Easy, gazmaz.com, Gazmaz on Twitter. I know I also do regularly the My Mac podcast with Guy Searle.
And Guy Searle's going to be at Macworld.
He is. You want to tie up with him. He's a small guy.
Well, he's coming on the Mac show.
Excellent.
He's already got a spot. So.
Superb. He's a good fan.
And Righty, where are you, boy?
At Twitter, at Ballums, and doing me old bit at the old British Set Network. iOS 7.1 review up tonight.
I've retweeted it as we during the show. So.
Cheers, sir.
My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. I'll be at Macworld with Paul Wheatley holding his hand. And I'm knackered now, so I'm going to bed. I do apologise. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.